The question was asked, we find in our parsha that the Torah doesn't want a parent to change between the inheritance of the kids. He has to recognize this is my firstborn, he gets a double portion, and not try to play around with that. And yet, we find that Yaakov seems to have played around with that both in his own inheritance by usurping Esav and in his children's inheritance by shifting things away from Reuven. So we need to know a bunch of things. Number one, the Torah doesn't preclude your ability, technically, to change the inheritance. Meaning, let's say I got $5 million. And I think that my daughter, who is number two, needs the money more than my eldest son. So I tell her, Esther, come, I want to give you a gift. And I give her $2 million. And then my third son, I also think he needs a little bit more help than my first son. So I give him $2 million. Now I'm left with a million. So my poor first son, after my 120, has to split the million with all the other kids. So he'll get a double portion, and the other kids get a single portion, and he'll end up with about 200,000, and they'll end up with 100,000. Fine. But I'm allowed to allocate my things at my lifetime. The Torah doesn't say, hold on to all your stuff so you have an inheritance. Meaning, on one level, the idea of not changing the order of inheritance is a very specific halacha. I am entitled to give gifts as I please. So we can't take it as an all-encompassing concept. It's not an all-encompassing concept. It's a defined concept. That's number one. Number two, what Yaakov took in the rights to the firstborn, it's not clear what it was that he took. And many commentaries say that what he took from Esav was, that's what we learned in the Ran, what he took from Esav was the right to be the leader of the family. When the Torah describes the rights of the firstborn, the Torah is describing monetary rights. What Yaakov and Esav were talking about was the right to lead the family, to be the continuation of Avram and Yitzchak. And that's what Yaakov says to Esav. He says, what's going to be with our family now? Today, Grandpa Avram died, and you just went and murdered Nimrod. How are we continuing the family with you as a leader? And Esav says to Yaakov, he says, Hinei anochi olech lamut v'lam azali b'chora. He says to him, I'm a gangster, and I'm going to die a violent death. What do I need these rights to the name of Avraham Avinu? So I'm going to walk around, and everyone's going to say, Al Capone was the son of a big tzaddik. It's not such an honor for Al Capone to be the son of a big tzaddik. If Al Capone could say he was the son of a big Russia, then, I'm a gangster, son of a gangster. But if I'm the gangster, son of a tzaddik, it's not like a big honor for me for people to say, oh, you know who his father was? That doesn't do me anything. And that's what Yaakov is saying to Esav. You're not representing the family. What are you going to do? And Esav says, you can have it. Give me that pot of lentils and you can have the rights to continue the family because I get nothing out of it. So what Yaakov was buying from Esav was not exactly that. That's in terms of that. Now we'll shift to your question, which is a totally different question. Your question is a question that the Rishonim already asked the question. How could Yaakov Avinu do that? So the easy answer is that Hashem told him to do it. Meaning the easy answer, which also in this case between Yaakov and Esav, is that there was a certain understanding that this is how Hashem wanted things to work out. Which goes into a whole different discussion, which is the Shvatim were not individual inheritors of their father. And here, I want to go off on a tangent and tell you guys an amazing lesson we had by an alumni of ours. 2 years ago, we did an event, we invited all the alumni, we went to this big park in Tel Aviv, and we got together with thousands of alumni from Machon Meir after many years that we hadn't had a reunion. Okay, I got to meet alumni from before my days at Machon Meir, and I said to them, guys, I'm sure you have tips for the guys, can I invite you to come and talk to the students at Machon Meir? And one of them agreed, and he came. And he said the following lesson, I don't remember his name, but you could see his class online, we recorded it. He said the following lesson, which I think is very worthwhile for you to hear. He told us the following story, and this is going to get back to your question. He said, when he came to Machon Meir, he came from the United States. And his family had their money and their business, and all the cousins were there, and the uncles were there, and the aunts were there, and the grandparents were there. And everyone was giving this big guilt trip, telling him, how could you leave your grandparents, and how could you leave your uncles, and how could you leave your aunts, and how could you do this to all your family? And they kept bugging him that he was coming to Israel. And he had to stand up to him. He kept feeling guilty. They kept telling him all these things. He said years passed, and he brought up a family here. And now, we're holding 20 years later, and he has one son who's successful in one area, and another son in another area, and a third daughter in another area, and they're all building very positive, wonderful lives, contributing to society and being positive members of society, and he's very proud of the family that he's built. And he looks at his relatives who stayed in the United States, and this one married a non-Jew, and that one went on out and became a drug dealer, and the third one sitting in jail, and the families fell apart. All his relatives in the United States, they're not so happy with the way their kids are turning out. You know, and this one has a 35, 40-year-old kid who's still at home, and his parents are funding him. And everyone is looking at the next generation and saying, oh boy, wait a second, what's going on here? And they're not so happy with the way their education has worked out. And he said that now when he looks back at his move to come to Machon Meir, he realizes that when you look at a family tree, there's the roots where you came from, there's the tree who's coming out of you, right? There's two sides to a family tree. There's where you came from and who you produce, right? Two things. And you're in the middle. You're that link. And very often when people pressure, or at least when they pressured him, they kept pressuring him about the other side of the tree. Your father, your grandfather, your uncle, your aunt, everyone who's before you. And when he made the move to come to Israel, he made the greatest investment for all future generations. When he sees how his children have come out, and he sees the family that he's built here, he suddenly realizes they were all focusing on what happened beforehand. And I, by making the move here, created the future for my family. And he said, as a message to the guys of Machon Meir, he said, you have to remember, you are the link to the future. And your moves are going to define your families forever, pretty much. You don't know if your kids will ever be able to pull out of the scenarios that you put them into. And if you go to the United States now and you get married and have kids in Chutz La'aretz, well, who said those kids will ever be able to pull out of that rut and get here? Yet if you start here, you're starting them off in a tremendous place. You've made a tremendous move for the future, for your future generations. Ah, previous generations have claims on you, but you have a certain responsibility. You're that link to the whole future. That was his line. When Yaakov Avinu is dealing with Reuven, he's not dealing with an individual son. You can't look at it as a regular family. Yaakov Avinu is dealing with the father of the tribe Reuven, the man who is going to give the traits, and he's going to be the defining factor of that tribe. And Yaakov Avinu understood that he did not have what it takes. He lost it when he went and did what he did, whatever it was, interfering with his father's intimacy. At that point, Reuven lost his rights. Now, did Yaakov do it by right? Is there a detail here in the laws of inheritance that Yaakov had a right to it? Did Yaakov do it by prophetic vision? Did Yaakov do it using a halachic loophole? What was the story exactly? That's already discussed in Rishonim. But the gravity of what Yaakov Avinu does is not about Reuven. It's about the tribe Reuven. It's not about the individual. And there Yaakov Avinu says, wait a second. I had two wives. And the rights to be the leader of the tribes could have been with you, Reuven, and you destroyed it. Now it goes to the firstborn from Rachel, because he did the exact opposite. His brothers tried to kill him, and he was silent. He saved everyone else's lives. Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him, and he stands up to the test. Where Reuven falters, Yosef shows the leadership qualities. So Reuven had many rights, but those rights were not the rights of the firstborn in the sense that we have in this week's parasha. The double portion that Yosef gets is a derivative of other rights of Yosef. It's not that double portion of Reuven. Yaakov didn't give him the land of Israel. That was the inheritance of the tribes down the road. Ah, you're talking about the rights as a tribe, not as the son of Yaakov? That's already a different calculation. And in that, so the book, the Pasuk in Divrayim in Chronicles says that when Reuven did whatever he did, which we're not so sure what he did, whatever he did, Reuven lost his rights to the throne. He should have had the throne. That went to Yehuda. He lost his rights to the priesthood. That went to Levi. He lost his rights to the double portion in Israel. That went to Yosef. So Reuven destroyed the potential of his tribe. It wasn't an individual inheritance from Yaakov. It could be when Yaakov died, he got his double portion. That's not the discussion here. It's the rights as a tribe. Okay? Okay, there are other answers given. I give one answer, there's much more about this. This is discussed.